Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora and welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby pod. Lots going on in New Zealand rugby at the moment with the Women's World Cup, which of course we'll delve into who's playing well, the playing style. Maybe an interesting comparison between the way it's played in the men's game and played in the women's game and the differences we've seen over the weekend. We've also had the All Blacks 15, which some people are joking and calling the Crusaders development side, as well picked this weekend. We'll get to the bottom of what that team's all about, especially for the international audience who don't really understand what an All Blacks 15 is and how that differentiates them from the All Blacks. So joining me now, James Parsons in Auckland. It's going to be a lot of fun. And over in Japan, former Crusader, current Japanese professional, Bryn Hall. How are you?
Good, mate. There's a lot of Crusader boys in there, isn't there, Ross?
There is. There are a lot of Crusaders within that side. It's quite an interesting team, the All Blacks 15, for that reason, isn't it? Like, what is the point of this team? It's kind of going two ways, development and helping keep fringe players?
Yeah, I definitely think there's elements of the selection that is guys that are in consideration still for the World Cup. And then there's an element of looking to the next four-year cycle and giving that opportunity, and also to see where they're at if they're ready for that next step. So I think it is a well-balanced side. There's definitely some unlucky players that are in awesome form that probably would be the next cab off the rank, but you've got to understand it from a coach's point of view and making sure that they hit the ground running of the next four-year cycle to build to the next World Cup as well.
And it is selected by the All Blacks selectors. Yeah. So, it's an interesting statement as to what's going on. I think two of the most interesting points. Peter Gus Saukula, Bryn. It wasn't long ago he was one of the form players of Super Rugby. He made his test debut. He scored a try under the posts. Everything seemed great. And now he can't even make the B team, the B squad. Why?
Well, it's a really good question, Ross, because look, he's come back for Taranaki and he's actually played some pretty good footy as well. So, it's a great opportunity for the guys of like Marino, who they haven't seen, and even the likes of Zach Gallagher, who can cover six, and whether he's seen as just a locker, I'm not too sure. But, and you've got Luke Jacobson, who's come back. But yeah, it's tough for Peter Gus. Not too long ago, he was playing in that Irish test, got two test matches, and he's obviously on the outer right now. So you're really tough. And even you look at guys like, Sean Stevenson as well, who had a great North Harbour set, played great for North Harbour, has played well in the Maldives and misses out. But I guess, these other guys that have played well, AJ Lamb and Ruben Love, who have been selected. So, Peter Gus is a big admission, I think, for me. A guy that was in the All Blacks squad, had a great Super Rugby, and has played pretty well in Mitre 10 Cup as well. So, I don't know, maybe we might have to get our journalist's boots on and ask why Peter Gus has been missing.
I think it's a little bit like a change in coach. The reality is the selection group for Ireland and then obviously into the Rugby Championship was different. But it surprised me on the... if I use Samasone Tokiaho as an example, like the impact he's having with carrying, getting that front football. Like Peter Gus is a big body and he, that's his point of difference, is he is so strong in the carry. So I'm sure he's getting some feedback and what they need to see, and you certainly can't count him out. But, he is a surprising admission.
Mm. And you mentioned the change of coach, and, well, there are a lot from a former Canterbury forward coach, former Crusaders forward coach. We look at Finlay Brewis, Tamaiti Williams, George Bell, Zach Gallagher, Dominic Gardner. These are all guys under 22 They're essentially Crusaders development players, and here they are on this trip.
I think, like, not to regurgitate a story that's been told 1,000 times, but Eric Rush, and when he first made the All Blacks, you know, he was told by his dad, you know, didn't over celebrate. It's only one man's opinion. And then when he dropped out of the All Blacks, and he was obviously down, and he goes, it's only one man's opinion. So when there is a change of coach, they know what their strength is and the type of player they need to get the best out of what they're expecting of their players. And you can't knock that. And obviously the depth and knowledge of those individuals is a lot greater than potentially others around in the NPC that are performing. You know, especially if you also look at a guy like Kurt Eklund, played extremely well for Ireland, against Ireland for the Maldives, and you know, doing a great job leading Bay of Plenty to a semi-final. You know, you have to consider him unlucky as well.
Bryn, the other interesting one there is Levi Almua. You know, Moana Pacifica, former Crusaders player, but Moana Pacifica, it's an odd decision because there's so much midfield depth, you'd expect that he'd want to play for a Samoan team that is building lots of good depth using overseas professionals that hadn't been available, and he could fit into that quite well, and here he is.
Well, I think the good thing about this All Blacks 15 is that you don't get caught as an international cap, you know what I mean? So, you know, he must have aspirations to want to be an All Black, and whether he's had words, he obviously has had words from the coaches to be able to say, you know, don't give up on the dream of being an All Black. So I guess what he does do, he's something different. You know, he's a guy that brings something different to all the other midfielders that we have at the moment. We've talked around, you know, Jordy and how well he played, being able to get the ability over the advantage line. And look, Levi Almua, whether it be at Mitre 10 Cup, Bunnings NPC, or even this year with Moana Pacifica, his ability to be able to beat the tackle one-on-one or even two, three defenders is one of his great strengths. And so, you know, it's a win-win for the All Blacks. You know, they get him into their All Black environment. He gets to play 2 test matches against the Barbars and against Ireland A. And if he plays well in that test match, it's a win-win for those selectors, thinking like, yep, we might be able to bring him up to the next level if there are injuries, or even next year they play as well for Moana Pacifica. But again, it still opens the door for him to be able to play for Samoa or Fiji, with him not being able to get international cap to stop him to be able to play with those island nations, even in the World Cup and in the future.
I liken him to Nani Lamapi. You know, like he has the ability to play 12, 13, potentially could even play on the wing. He's fast enough. And from my understanding, Levi made it very clear that he wanted to be up for selection for this team, and obviously the All Blacks as well. So he's obviously motivated by that. He's performing extremely well, played, you know, was player of the year for Moana Pacifica, and would have gone close, you know, down at the Mako, but his centre mate as well, Nankerville. It's actually a really good reward for him. And the work he's done over a number of years, you know, in that midfield, but also has that versatility to play wing as well, as we saw for the Chiefs this year. So it's actually exciting for both those men, and what their future may hold. Still very young, but got a lot of runs on the board.
Sorry, I was just going to say as well, Ross, I think, you know, a guy like Bryce Heame, you know, on the other way as well, you know, obviously gone away overseas and then applied his trade for the Blues, coming back and playing well for NPC with Auckland. He's a great guy. I think it's great reward as well. He's been around a little bit and hasn't gone through the traditional route of staying in New Zealand, and, you know, even the development of these young guys we talked about with the Crusader boys. It's great for a guy like Bryce Heame to get an opportunity to play at this level, because seasoned, experience, been around the world, and a great story for a guy like that to make that side as well.
I think also the impact that he had, Bryn, on the Blues. You know, he was a really massive leader in that environment, and he brought the best out of a lot of people. So I think they saw that not only in the people around him at the Blues, but also in his individual performances and what he can do. And again, I hate to say it, but versatility. He can play midfield and he can play on the wing. Potentially could play at fullback as well.
But more than likely he's there to help lead and guide.
Well, he'll be a big factor of that. You know, obviously Paddy's there. You know, Bryce, you've got Damien, you've got a big bulk of experience. I even chuck Asafa Amor in that camp. Like, he's shining as a leader. You know, you talk about someone unlucky as well, as probably his captain, Duplessis Karifi. But he's had a massive season, not only in his performance, but what he's doing and bringing his best out of others, but the selfless nature of his work that he's doing in and around their systems to obviously not overplay his hand, but when he does get involved in the game, he's making big impacts.
Karifi, he was brought into the All Blacks a year or so ago. This time round, they've gone with Billy Harmon.
Again, I hate to say it, but you know, obviously Plumtree was there and he liked Duplessis. And again, it's a player he has a lot of knowledge of and a lot of depth to it. And it's no different for Jace Ryan and Billy Harmon. And I don't. It's really hard to compare the two because both of them have had outstanding NPCs. Like Billy Harmon's been massive. You know, and I'm not wanting to bring it up, obviously Bryn was a big fan of Canterbury winning at home. Not as easy as you thought, me old mate. But Billy Harmon was massive in getting some key turnovers when Northland were running hot at the end of that first half, and he did it towards the end to give them the opportunity to win that game.
Real kind of interesting points in here as well, I think. Obviously, your old mate Bryn Gatland, he's there.
Mate, I was so pumped for that.
Do you start him or Damien McKenzie at 10? How do you approach this? You give him a game each?
Potentially start Gats and Damien at 15, bring Damien up to first five and bring a guy like Ruben Love in, potentially. But you've also got the ability to start Damien and have Ruben Love. So it may look different for both games as two games, but you'd have to think on form at 10, you know, Bryn was a key reason that, you know, Harbour couldn't bring it home against Auckland. Yep. So I think, you know, he's probably the most informed 10. And Damien's versatility early in the game, having that time to see where he can attack, you know, is when he's his biggest weapon. And then when he steps up to that first receiver role, which he does a lot from 15 anyway, but late in the game against tiring bodies, he is just so, you know, dangerous throughout that full 80. I just think it's his better fit of going from 15 to 10.
What would you do, Bryn?
Yeah, I think exactly what Jip said, and I think, you know, depending on, you know, Geordie Barrett and what his position is going to be moving forward, we've obviously got Bowden Barrett, who's got that, you know, we've talked about the double pivot role, but he plays it pretty well anyway, just as a fullback. But, you know, Damo can do that position as well. He can do that, play at 10, play at 15. So, you know, having the ability to play 15, whether that be Bryn starts or, you know, the All Black selectors want to see him at 10 and try and go for what Stephen Perifetta has been doing, has that been that third 10 who can cover that 15 role. So, but yeah, I think we haven't seen a lot of Damien McKenzie. I think, you know, he's obviously an All Black and people have wanted to see him play this level. So I think, you know, some people would have thought wanted to see him in the All Black squad when selected. But I think this is a great opportunity for him to play, be able to play 10 or 15. And, you know, they could even split it with Bryn starting one and then Damo starting at 10. And like Jip said, you've got Ruben Love who can cover 15 as well.
One guy, Bryn, I want to ask you about, mate, is Cam Roygaard. Obviously, I was a big fan throughout the NPC. But a great reward for someone that's delivered massively against a team that, well, for a team that's been struggling.
Yeah, it was, mate. And I think that's the best thing about it. You know, sometimes when you're in these top teams, they tend to get a look in a little bit more when you're playing well and teams are winning. You tend to get the teams get selected that way. But look, he's been outstanding for Counties. He's been the best player in that competition, to be honest. You know, if he wasn't playing, it would have been even, I think, a little bit worse for that Counties team because of how influential he was. And it's going to be great for him. You know, he's been in that Hurricanes environment. He's learned to under TJ a little bit. But, you know, any time you can get into that All Black environment and be with that kind of professional, really professional outfit and being able to learn, prepare and see other guys that are at a high level, it's going to be great for his development moving forward. And even, you know, coming into next year, we'll be able to push TJ in that Hurricane squad because, like you said, Jip, and for you, Ross, a good Counties man. It was great to see him to be able to be rewarded for such a great season and good to see that you do get rewarded at Mitre 10 Cup or Bunnings NPC. It doesn't matter what team you play for.
So many good Counties players across those squads now.
Oh, there is. There is. Are you going to be able to keep them all? Is the question.
Oh, we poach most of them anyway. Yeah. Never mind keeping them. The RTS factor as well. Like, there's a couple of things, I think, in the All Blacks squad where people thought maybe they could have been used in the All Blacks 15. Stephen Perifetta and RTS. You know, they could get a lot of game time in these two games, or they could get minimal game time on an All Black tour. You know,
I think there's the potential to go between the squads. I think they're both up there, and there's if you know they've got to be there as injury cover or starters throughout the tour for the All Blacks first and foremost. But if the squad's going well and you know building towards that England test, and they're not getting as many minutes, I think it wouldn't be a foreign concept for a number of All Blacks if it works for, you know, again, the coaches. The coaches that selected it will have an idea potentially of, and that's where they might have gone for a little bit more youth, because there could be some opportunity of dropping guys down. But you know, you'll never know until the tour gets underway. But I don't think it would be a foreign concept to see some of the All Blacks play for this side.
So what's the goal? Obviously, there's the personal goals and there's the development side of it. But this is a rugby team that's going to play rugby teams and has to win.
Mm.
So from, you know, a standpoint where you're only playing a couple of games a year and you're almost like a Barbarians team coming together for a couple of weeks, how do you go about making this a success from a team point of view, Bryn?
Well, I think we've seen it before with the New Zealand Maldives. Very similar. You only come together, you know, 1 or 2 weeks, and the preparation side's really, really small. And so, but again, whenever you put an All Blacks jersey or a New Zealand Maldives jersey on and play for your country, it has incentive for you to play well. And no doubt, you know, Leon, Scott Hansen and the All Black selectors as well will be obviously driving home that point around, you know, this is an All Black 15. And the players will know as well that the expectation is to win, and knowing what it means to be in the All Black 15. So the preparation side will just be probably a lean menu, very small menu, and being able to, I guess, use the talents of all the guys that they have there and being able to just go out there and play instinctively. So I know Leo McDonald's very attention to detail, and, you know, we have some really good game plans along with Scott Hansen. But again, there's been a blueprints of how you can do it with New Zealand Māori and even teams in the future, in the past with the junior All Blacks as well.
I think Clayton McMillan's a great coach for the forwards as well. Like, he'll keep it simple. And I think he's had that great experience, like Bryn says, around the New Zealand Māori. So he's got a really good sort of game plan or you know, knowledge of how to bring the best out of squads, because he's been so successful as the New Zealand Māori coach. So I think he's a key asset, and it's great to see him progressing, you know, what he's done for the Chiefs and you know, brought them through. And then with the New Zealand Māori, it's also good for the coaches to know, and it's good for us to retain those sorts of coaches, you know, that we need in this country to develop our super players to become next All Blacks, and it's also a stepping stone for them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens to the third level of players as well, because if you see that you're not in the top 70 players in the country, there's a chance you're going to be going. Like, for instance, the rumours around Sean Stephenson going to the NRL. Sean Stephenson right now will be going,
Potentially, yeah. Like, let's make no bones about it. An opportunity to go play for the Dolphins under Wayne Bennett would be enticing. I don't know if it's rumours or true, but yeah, it is really hard. Especially back three is always tough, and probably Damien's versatility doesn't help Sean. But based on his form, I expected to see him in this team. But again, sometimes need to take that patch off. So, but like he's been one of the form players in the NPC, and I know Sean wears his heart on the sleeve, and he'll be gutted.
Yeah.
But so, like many would be. And that's what I mean when players are aspirational and you don't achieve it. You've got to have that hurt. If you don't have that hurt, then why are you actually turning up? Because these are the teams you want to make.
One of the greatest heart on your sleeves moments I think I've ever seen in rugby was on the weekend at Eden Park. When they were lined up for the anthems and you could see the smiles on the players' faces, the New Zealand and Australian players, that is, before that game was amazing. They're looking up at a full stand and the smile, like, you don't see people smile during the anthems. There's intensity, there's this one, there's, you know, tears, there's a lot. But this overjoyed nature of it was quite incredible, Bryn, just to feel the importance of it and how they couldn't help but just be in the moment.
Well, it just shows, doesn't it? You know, when people are given opportunities, it shows how much they care about it. And, you know, the New Zealand women have been talking about this a long time. They're wanting to, you know, make their own kind of groundbreaking stories and I guess, and players have been able to have the opportunity to play in those kind of games, because, look, it was great for the public to come out and you could see, like you said, Ross, the smiles and I guess the opportunity to be able to play in front of that many people. And probably, no doubt, we'll go into a little bit more. You know, probably was the pressure of being able to play in front of people and the expectation of being at home. And the Black fans probably struggled a little bit in the early doors of that game. But again, you know, this is probably going to, hopefully, this is an opportunity for this to be able to happen a lot more, because I guess those girls, no different from us players, when you're playing games like that, there's a lot of people watching, there's a lot of hype around it. just adds to the entertainment of being able to go out and play for your country as well. So no doubt we'll go into a little more about it, but great to see those pitches and see those girls passionate around playing at a full stadium at Eden Park.
I think it just resembled, they are almost two different games. Yes, it's the same game of rugby, but it's played in different styles. The emotion of certain things like the anthem and the haka is just taken differently. And it's given a quite a neat perspective on you know, how different it is, I suppose. You know, even if you look at throughout the game, you know, lack of kicks in play, you know, they were picking and going from 60 out, but, you know, earned penalties, and there is quite a big difference in the styles, and I think that's a good thing.
Mm, the ball in hand aspect of it is amazing. Like, it is literally in hand the entire time. And, you know, we complain about in the men's game that there's not enough play.
Yeah.
Well, in the women's game.
The ball in play was huge, and you know, sometimes when you look at the stats, like I was just thinking, what would, you know, Wayne Smith be thinking? And probably the handling errors were quite high. I think it was 11-1 in the first half. And that's quite high in the sense that Aussies had 65% of the ball in territory. So, and then they only had one turnover, and we obviously had 11. So we had chance in our arms and you know, going after it. But it is a risk versus reward. So I think early on the test, they'll want to shore that out because you wouldn't want to give that many opportunities to an England side, especially being able to go kick for the corner. Because when the Australian attackers got between two defenders, it just made that ruck a little bit deeper. And then that's when the advantages came, and that penalties just snowboard. And obviously Aussie took reward of it, but they probably should have scored more points. And I think we saw the value of the seven stars, particularly Flula and Tui and Flula and Woodman. You watch them defensively, they're always in sevens. You're in compromising positions defensively. So their ability to read that and make great decisions and use the sideline as their friend was awesome. But also when they didn't need to use their sideline as a friend, they were up and closing space. And I thought that was huge. Defensively, they actually did really well to, I know it got to 17-0 or 17-7, but it could have been a lot worse, and a lot of it was that defence on the edge. And the only time they got caught short was the quick tap, and they were probably expecting a kick to the corner and an intercept. But other than that, it was a pretty tight defensive effort, and they were massive. And in the 24th minute, you saw Sarah Hiddeny be inside Ruby Tui, and it's like Ruby just reacted off her. Sarah Hiddeny, boom, chop tackle, bang, turnover. So all those sorts of things, they'll build nicely. They'll learn a lot from that. Smithy will, you know, take a deep dive in particular that first 40. And I think it was a nice scare for them to have now, knowing they could come back and win. And now it prepares them with a little bit of a harder edge building into the latter parts of the competition.
Yeah. I think that's the that's the most important thing there, Jip, being able to come back and being able to, you know, what was it, 41 unanswered points that they're able to score from there. Because, look, you know, playing in a big game in front of a lot of hype, a lot of people and expectation to go out there and perform very, very well with Wayne Smith and how they've played the last year, they could have fallen into the trap and not come back. And so it's great for them to be able to show a bit of grit and resilience, to be able to come back, put in some performances and be able to, I guess, rectify from that start. But, yeah, I agree with you, Jip. If you can't, we can't be able to give opportunities of unforced errors and being able to get the likes of England, who on the weekend against Fiji shows, if you don't get it right, they've got the ability to score 10, 11 tries. So I don't think they'll score that much against us, but, you know, we don't want to be giving them opportunities. And so I think it does, it's a good start for them and being able to keep them honest. The review, no doubt Wayne Smith will be very good around that and wording it right for the girls. But again, as well, it's hard to play your opposition when you've played them a lot. You know, they've played the Australians four times this year, and sometimes, you know, the occasion of, you know, being able to beat them and never lose to them could have fallen to their plan as well. But I don't think so. I think it's more so the occasion of what Eden Park and the kind of opening and the crowd. But it'll set them up very, very well. And, you know, England looked good as well, even though the start against Fiji, not as great, but came right over the top with their set piece and how dominant they were in that area in the second half.
Bryn, were you surprised by the lack of kicking? I think it was around the sort of 50-60 minute mark. Australia, 227 metres to our 28 metres, and those 28 metres were obviously attacking kicks. I think it almost said to me, like, I was surprised, but then I thought, Well, every time Australia's kicked, the mindset is to attack, and obviously the Black Ferns scored a number of tries from the, you know, kick counter-attack. It almost, because of that ball in play and that mindset that we're at all-out attack, doesn't matter where we are in the field, you wouldn't want to kick. Mm. You know, like, but all teams are looking like every time they just want to attack.
Yeah. I guess that's the good thing about the women's game. And I guess watching it, you know, we've talked a lot around how much of a kicking game, whether it be contestables off 9, off 10, kicking down the middle of the field and being able to manipulate because defences are so good. But I guess with the women's game, and especially the New Zealanders, the Black Ferns, we know that when they play the likes of England, the ability that they have, they wanted to get around teams and use their skill set, is going to be really important for them. And so, you know, they only had 6 kicks on the weekend, you know, so it was a pretty clear plan that they were wanting to run the Australians around and wanting to use their skill set. But, you know, just through, that's the probably, if you don't get it right and you get a lot of unforced errors against a team like England, if you do play like that, so don't kick a lot, you might get into a little bit of trouble. But, I think it is different. I think France had 27 kicks who kicked the most during that first round. But, you know, more so for the New Zealanders, you'd like to think that there might be a little bit more balance if they don't get it right and there are a lot of unforced errors. How can we still exert pressure and be able to get them in difficult situations defensively? You know, those attacking kicks that we saw with DeMont early on against the Australians in the previous test matches before the World Cup have the ability to do that. Hazel Chubbuck can do the attacking kicks as well and has actually shown at Aupiki and with counties that she can kick as well. Because I think they are going to have that option, I think, when they do play the likes of France and England. If they aren't getting their attacking structures right with ball in hand, with unforced errors, you've got to be able to have a kicking game, which we've talked about with the men's level.
Yeah, and I think it's an attacking kicking game because both those sides want to go to set piece. You know, like, you still got to have the kicking game like you talk about those players having, but it's almost like long and in, or you're looking to get the ball back. Because I think the more often they go to set piece, the more comfortable, you know, a French and an English side will be.
On paper, this weekend, the England versus France game seems like the game of pool play. Yep. Like, this is the big one. From what you saw on the weekend, how do you think this one's going to play out?
I think England will win. I don't think the French should kick as much as they do. I think they've got such attacking threats and they'll want to go to set piece. They've probably got a little bit more dominant set piece as well. So I think the French are going to have to find a little bit of French flair and try and change up what England are expecting. But from what I saw, I think, just like I said with the Black Ferns, that little scare of 40 minutes will bring quite a hard edge to the English preparation. And I think we'll see a much better side that comes out on the weekend.
A few, Bryn?
Yeah, I agree. I think the French would love to go to set piece as much as they can. You know, we even saw last year pictures of when they played the Black Ferns, how dominant they were in their scrum halves. The two good scrum halves that they've got and been able to play off that were really good. So,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But I think, again, I think for France, it's going to be the ability to stay on for the whole 80 against this English side because, you know, it's been under no illusions. These girls, what, 27 or whatever, how many in a row fixtures of winning test matches and playing the Six Nations and playing against them pretty consistently. So their ability to stay on for 80 minutes and, you know, win moments and just stay in it for as long as they can and, I guess, get to a position where it comes into the last 20 where it's very, very close. And, you know, that's when you start questioning English skills and saying, you know, can you beat us because we're staying with you the whole time. But, you'd expect the French to try and win through that set piece and get some dominance there and then being able to get into the 22 like South African men and go to their line-out drive in their scrum as well.
The Welsh had a tough game on the weekend that probably prepared them quite well for the Black Ferns.
Yeah, well, they got ahead quite comfortably, but turned around in the second half and nearly lost that one. So, and which is surprising because Scotland obviously didn't have a victory in the Six Nations, but and probably didn't come as close as they did. So they just buttoned off a little bit. So they'll want to be better as well. And I think it's like we've mentioned a lot, like momentum will change, but it's about how fast you get that momentum back. And I think all the sides on the weekend would say it probably took too long in patches to get the momentum back to their way, especially the sides that were expected to win.
And for the Black Ferns, I suppose it's an interesting question, Bryn, is what they do with their selection this time around. Do you stay the course? Do you build on the team that played last week, or do you look to make a number of changes against Wales?
Yeah, I think there might be a few changes. You'd like to think that they want that ability to have the cohesion and, I guess, build throughout the tournament. But, yeah, I think there will be a few changes. You know, I'm not too sure with Kadatu, whether it's her injury or whether that brings Bremer in for an opportunity at six, or they go in a different direction. But, yeah, I think because they haven't played a lot of test matches and, you know, that they're not the same as the All Blacks, where you have full fixture seasons of playing 14, 15 tests, you know, I think Wayne Smith will probably have a nucleus of the squad that he probably wants to keep together. But then again, giving girls opportunity and opportunities to be able to stake the claim for the later parts of the tournament.
Yeah, I think one, the slow start and just wanting to keep a little bit of edge in the group will mean there's a number of changes. And it's a long tournament, so you just got to keep your powder dry. So I think we'll see a relatively different side from the previous game.
Is the big selection question, after seeing Ruby Tui have a huge game and Portia Woodman do what Portia Woodman does, Ayesha Letilinga has probably been the best Black Fern in the last 12 months. And can she make this side?
Look how busy she was when she came on. Like, it's... Yeah. And I think that opportunity, you can... All that competition brings the best out in everyone. And I think I just go back to what Wayne Smith said, is he doesn't know his best 23 yet. So even though that was a 23, to me as a player, I'm thinking, man, you've got to dot your I's and cross your T's, because you're on a knife edge whether you're going to be in the 23, in the starting 15, or left out altogether. So I think he's still probably using this pool play to, one, assess form, current form, and who's going to give them the best opportunity, but also styles. Having the ability to change styles and take on teams that may have different threats.
Mm. You bring that cohesion argument that you're talking about earlier with Stacey Fluller and the Sevens players. Would that be the thing that maybe holds Ayesha back?
I think...
You go, Bryn.
I think the thing as well is that, like, Jip says a lot, you know, your currency is only as good as you're playing. You know, so if you're Ruby Tui and you're Portia Woodman, you continue to, whatever opportunities you are given, you tell Wayne Smith that, you know, I'm playing well and you've got to select me. And so, you know, that'll be no different with, you know, with those girls and even the girls in general, knowing that, you know, if they don't know who their starting 23 is or who the best 15 is, it gives you incentive in the training weeks and even in training and for the games moving forward that, you know what, I've got to put my best foot forward here because it's an open competition. You know, the team isn't made. And so it gives you an incentive as a player to want to play well, train well, and when given the opportunity, you've just got to take it with both hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out because they are phenomenal players.
Oh, unbelievable. I do think that cohesion and being able to read each other, like I used that example in the 24th minute of Ruby Tui's turnover, it was just so obviously like they've done that a million times on the Sevens circuit, but... It's just so, I just thought it just shows the benefit of being comfortable with the uncomfortable defensively. Mm. Like, they're so used to being so uncomfortable in the Sevens game because there's so much space that they didn't look panicked when there was an overlap or maybe they didn't quite get their connection right. They knew and they trusted each other that they'd turn up and be there, and I just think that's a massive point of difference when you start going into the deeper part of the... And they're used to big stages. It's 17-0 down. At no point would have they not felt that and come back in a Sevens game. And I know it's different and there's more time, but it's not different in their mindset and the way they'll be thinking. And that is powerful to have in a huddle. and the smiles are still there. You look at the turnover, they're 17-7 or whatever it is in the turnover, and the smile, they don't think they're losing. Mm. It almost, you don't even look at them and think they're under pressure.
Yeah.
And I think that is just something that they need to harness, and the more often that can be on the field, the better.
They've played so many games as sevens players. I suppose that's the thing that you get. There's certain, you know, big matches that you play in sevens that will stand out, but you play so many games and you're put in that situation so often that it's just second nature.
Yeah, but also, you in sevens, you can get out to a big lead and still lose. So, I don't know, all those experiences is just so powerful. And look, the 15s game will get it more and more, and this group will feel it and grow it, but at this current moment, their level of big game experience is massive.
Mm. Who else impressed you, Bryn?
I think actually for the Italian team, I enjoyed watching the Italian team, which was a great result for them. And I know we were talking about the Black Ferns, but you know, I thought the two wingers, Mozzo and Magari, man, they were, if the Italians can give them more opportunities to try and score tries on the edge, because with that ball in hand, we've talked around Porsche Wibb and Ruben Tui, and their opportunities and being able to score points and when given the opportunities. I thought those two girls were outstanding for Italy. So yeah, they were two girls that I thought really stood up for an Italian team, which I think is a dark horse, guys. I don't know about Juju, but you know, I was pretty impressed with the Italians and getting that win on the weekend.
Yeah, well, they didn't have a strong Six Nations either, so they'll be buoyed by it. But I don't know how deep they'll go. In terms of, you know, if you look at the ruthless nature of the teams like the French, the English, and obviously the Black Ferns, it'll be a big ask. I do want to make mention of the Black Ferns skipper, Ruhe Demant. I thought she was massive. That ball she gave inside to Ruby Tui when Ruby, I know it's a try assist of such, but Ruby did the freakish of all freakish runs with raw pace, but that pressure from that Aussie defender was right up, and she just tapped it like that, didn't even catch it. Mm. I think she was huge in terms of making the most of the platform given up front and allowing even Duplessis and Flula the opportunity with ball in hand to manipulate defence to free up, you know, Tui and Woodman.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like for a long time, because Kendra Coxedge has been such a dominant force, that the Black Ferns have played a lot off nine. They've kicked a lot off nine, they've played a lot off nine. I feel like now that licence is there, Ruahe's confidence has grown that, yeah, I'm a key playmaker here too. It's not just the halfback.
I feel like she's got a great feel of when the forwards are going forward and Kendra's getting out and sucking in defenders. Sometimes she even reacts off her and promotes herself, but she also has a great feel when she wants the ball quick. And I think her times where she lets the forwards and Kendra have their moment and have times that she wants it released, which is probably coming from good comms from outside, but she's a big part of making sure that she orchestrates the balance of that attack and doing a great job.
Yeah.
I think what it does as well, with Wayne Smith coming in, even the unforced, there was a lot of unforced errors on the weekend. When they do get it right and you get the animation right with the forward runners, and you know, we've talked about Richie Mwanga and that ability to play out the back or play on the edge, when you get that good go full board, players like Demont, they can just really influence games, whether that be with the attacking game of running, distribution or kicking. And so, hopefully moving forward, the forward pack of the New Zealand team, and we'll be able to give them good go forward ball, because when you've got Duplessis, you've got Flula, who I thought was outstanding on the weekend with her link play, running play, and defensively, like you talked around, Jip, the more times that they can get really good ball and being able to, I guess, get to the edge and being able to give those girls opportunities, gives the likes of Demont great opportunities to be able to do good things in games.
Another person I'm sure you were impressed with on the weekend was Laura Sansou from France. You enjoy watching her play, Brent, the halfback?
Yeah, I did. I think I said it previously, last time when I saw them watching that India tour, her ability to be able to attack and snipe. We talk about Dupont and the French halfbacks and how he's one of the best players in the world. It's great to have that kind of player as well, who can, I guess, just really smart as well. They've got a really good knack. I don't know what they do in the French game over there, but the ability to be able to kick, run and pass and, I guess, make good decisions under pressure. That's what I really like to see with them. And so they've got really good, two good halfbacks in that group. So you talk around competition, they can't afford to not have good games because you've got great competition in that team of the French women.
That's an amazing story that the two halfbacks are a couple. Can you imagine like TJ Pettinata and Aaron Smith competing for the same position?
Imagine the competitive edge. Imagine the competitive edge. They'd be competing who can dry the dishes as quick.
What a dynamic to go home with.
Well, I'm just thinking of TJ, like everything's a competition with him, most halfbacks, but he is, seriously, it would be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely.
But on the other hand, imagine how much you get to hone the skills when you live with, I'd know Bryn, like halfbacks are sometimes the hardest working, they always last out on the training field. You'd be able to do it in the backyard, get even better.
Passing down the hallway.
Just passing down the hallway, just even the chats you can have as well. I think even as a halfback group, there's so many conversations that you have, but, you know, if you're able to do that at home and even go out for dinner or a coffee, no wonder those two are playing good footy and why they're so good for France.
Yeah, you and Drummy, you know, you probably missed a trick here.
Oh, we have, mate. I would have loved to have dinner made by Drummy. So, I missed one here.
Drummy's with Drummy.
Open a restaurant.
Yeah.
Okay, before we move on from the World Cup, each week I think what we should do is a little power rankings based on the form of the weekend before. So based on that, who do you see as the top four teams at this World Cup?
England won. I think the Black Ferns will pip France for the comeback in the style. French third, fourth. It's probably between Wales and Canada. Maybe Canada, I don't know. It's a hard one, that fourth one. Wales should have run away with it, but obviously a less opposition for Canada, so I can't pick the fourth, sorry.
It could be a five. That fence is,
fourth eagle.
Yeah. Bryn?
No, I'll go Canada.
Canada?
I'll go Canada.
He's in.
Yeah, I think the top three speak for themselves. Whether you want to have France at two and have New Zealand at three, but I think with how the girls have been going and went on the weekend, you put them at two just in front of France. And then I guess their fourth position really is up for grabs. You can go Wales, you go Canada. I liked what I saw in Italy. Whether you think they can do that again or can go to the later stage of the competition will be seen in the future. But for me, I'd have to probably go Canada. Yeah, that would be, if I had to make a decision, I'd have to go Canada at four.
Are we missing a beat? Like, the Wallaroos were pretty strong as well.
Mm.
Like, maybe they have to be considered like for... It's only one winner, one team out of the pool though, isn't it?
I think it's two out of each pool and then the next best qualifiers go into a quarterfinal setup.
Okay, yeah. Maybe Aussie are there or thereabouts. If they can play that brand and that... Like, they were so physical and played with such up-tempo... that breakdown speed was just catching the Black Ferns offside or not allowing them to get dominant tackles. If they can sustain that, we probably overlooked, the more I think about it, I feel like I'm going to put Aussie at four, because the two yellow cards did change that game. There were a lot of points scored in that period, and it was right on the balance at that point, and there was a lot of counteract tries. There was I'm not taking away from the Black Ferns, but there was clear defensive frailties with 13 on the field. I'm going to go Wallaroos 4.
Wallaroos.
I've convinced myself.
Yes, that was good.
I've convinced myself.
I enjoyed the thought process.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, well, we'll look forward to that on the weekend to see how the power rankings change, if they change next week. You know, I hope France tops England and really makes this an interesting competition.
Would definitely turn on their head. Well, you know, we went for the obvious ones last week. Well, I didn't. Obviously, I picked Northland and the NPC, but the BOP and Auckland probably got the upset, so anything's possible.
But have plenty of chance in Canterbury, Bryn?
Yeah, I think I've changed my tune on that. I think I did think Canterbury would win it a little bit more easier. But look, it was a great game for the Northern game against Canterbury. What a great season they've had. But I think they plenty do have a chance against Canterbury. So still hurting after watching their Harbour game against Auckland. But congratulations to Auckland.
2013 and Northland opted for the kick. What did you think then, Bryn? They obviously got to 2016, yeah, but I just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I when watching that, I just thought, it's probably, like, it's not like it's within 3 points or 5 or 7. It was 4. You know what I mean?
100%.
So they had to score a try. And I think, and sometimes when you get in that position, you know, you might think it's penalty and we can come back down here and score points. But for me, I just think it let Canterbury off the hook. It gave them an opportunity to reset. They came down and then they were able to, you know, get a penalty with Fergus Birkin to ice the game. And so, for me personally, I think it was the wrong decision. And probably if they had any time again, thinking back on it, they probably would have gone to the corner and tried to win the game, win the game there.
And I know they'd been bashing away before the half-time break and in the second half and hadn't got rewarded. Like, I can see where their head was at in terms of can we pick up three. But my only concern, and this is what I thought at the time, was exiting, they hadn't done well all game, and Canterbury love putting pressure on that exit, and it just played into their hands a little bit. They obviously got a penalty. They got to kick to the corner and the maul was held up and turned over, but they eventually got what they came for. I was also a little bit surprised Canterbury didn't take the three then, and they went to the corner and they were held up. But I suppose with a driving maul that's been as effective as... they're just the best at closing. And I just think the better place to be is down your end when you're outside seven. You know Hawkins can kick from anywhere. So if you do score in the corner, it just, you know, sets it up for potentially a golden point.
With the All Blacks 15 pack, you really should be able to do that.
You should.
Now, are you guys all right after the Auckland game versus Harbour?
Oh, I'm not going to lie, it hurt.
Yeah.
It definitely hurt. As soon as I saw Gats didn't come out at halftime, like, he's in such a rich vein of form that he just knows when it needs to be, you know, where there's kick space and he can go long and he can put the ball in front of his feet. We just probably played a little bit too much out of our own end. And just 15-6 put ourselves in a position, but I know I'm not supposed to say ourselves, but everyone knows I'd be lying if I didn't. But you've got to credit Auckland. They didn't play their best game, but they found the way to win. And it wasn't made easy for them and potentially sets them up, because Wellington didn't have it all their own way either. Mm. I think that semi-final, will be real. I was obviously pumping Wellington up heavily last week, but Hawke's Bay gave it to them and nearly stole it, really. Probably could have.
Yeah.
To give everyone a bit of insight, go on, Brett.
I thought, just going on the back of Jip for that Harbour game, if there's one guy that I probably thought couldn't get injured, you don't want injured, it was Bryn, and it probably showed in that last 40 minutes, 15-6 going into halftime, and, you know, thinking the way that his form has been, the game management that he brings for that side, especially our forwards as well, because, you know, when they brought a lot of the All Blacks coming back and really struggled at scrum time, and then also line out as well, the Auckland forwards really were able to get upper hand up there, but I think if there's one guy that we probably couldn't afford to get injured, it was Bryn Gatlin on the weekend. So I'm not too sure what his injury is and whether that's going to have any say on his All Black 15. Like you said, Jeff, Hawke's Bay will probably be sitting a few beers now, having their mad Monday, thinking they lost one there because they did that well to get back. You know, Wellington started very well and then should have actually won that game and stole it. But, you know, to Wellington's credit, like Auckland, they didn't play their best footy in their parts of that game, but were able to find a way to win and to get to the semi-final stages, which will be a cracking of a semi-final against those two teams.
Yeah, it will be. I think the other one's going to be a beauty too, Canterbury Bay of Plenty. Like, probably glossed over Bay of Plenty's. Man, they were just ruthless in that period to run away from that. I know, obviously scored 80-plus, which tightened it up, but Leroy Carter, how the last 2 weeks, he has just destroyed defence of Waikato. So, as long as he keeps his red-hot form and Trask and Coke can put the ball in the right spots, you know that pack's going to be up for it. There's a lot of, Arcoy, Eklund. There'll be a bit of gristle in there too, because those two would have been liking their chance for All Black 15. So plenty to prove, especially for Curdy, going up against, Brody and George Bell. And knowing his competitive edge, he will be through the roof with excitement.
Okay, so what's the prediction then? I'm presuming Canterbury.
I'll go Bay of Plenty.
Bay of Plenty, yes.
I think it'll be a lot closer than what I predicted last week, even though it was close to an Northern game. But I'll go Canterbury in a tight game, though. Very, very tight. I think what Bay of Plenty can do, you know, they've got a great forward pack that can do the hard work. They've got some great ball carriers in there, and they've also got an electric back line. You know, so the questions that they're going to be asking that Canterbury defense is going to be, I think, a little bit more than what the Northern team was. We talked a lot around Northern and how good they are defensively, but I think the Bay of Plenty and what they can do on the attacking side will be tough for the Canterbury side. But I'll go Canterbury by 2 points, actually. 2 points.
2 points. Get to the tab. That's what it's about. Mm. And who do they play, Wellington or Auckland?
I'll stick with Wellington. I just think their form coming into the finals has got to pay dividends for them. Auckland have got enough talent to find a way to win as well. They showed that on the weekend. Like they can grind out a win, and they've also got enough X factor that can turn it on its head. So it won't be easy. But I think the defensive effort that Richard Judd did on Chase Teatea to stop Hawke's Bay from scoring in the corner and saving a certain potential match winner will be needed again this weekend.
Do they have the All Blacks back, Chip? Do they still have Auckland have them in the team?
Not sure. Don't know.
Yeah.
I think you're not going to remove any of the All Blacks 15 guys, so you'd have to think Paddy will definitely play. It'll just be whether Akita plays or not. Knowing Akita, he'll want to play because he wants to play every game. He even loves turning out for club footy if he can. But it'll just be, I don't know when they're travelling.
You love these guys who love to turn up for club footy. I always remember covering the Hurricanes, and you'd have a chat with Andrew Hoare on a Monday, and he had taken off down and played for the Maggots in the South Island on the weekend, and you're like, I don't know that fits in your contract, mate. Like, I'm not sure how that works for you. And so he's just played a game, now he's played another game, now he's back at training and he's going again.
I think it's like, especially Ponsonby, like Paddy always gets back there and plays. Rico, any chance he gets, he'll go train there if he can't play. I think it's really cool, that connection that's still in our game and such a crucial part of our pathway as our clubs.
Yes, yeah, right. And the grassroots stuff that's slightly below the NPC, the Heartland semis.
Yeah. Whanganui weren't as clinical as they probably would have liked, but they've got a home match against the Swamp Foxes, Thames Valley. So you'd have to like them. And I think South Canterbury, they were massive in the Shield game against Hawke's Bay and really haven't dipped in that form the whole way. So I think they'll probably win theirs more convincingly. But Whanganui at home will give them the edge. And probably a little bit predictable, those two sides ran. Whanganui only lost once, and that was against South Canterbury. So I think it'll be a South Canterbury-Whanganui final. And I do think Whanganui are going to have to be a lot more clinical. They gave so many opportunities to mid-Canterbury. Mid-Canterbury just weren't good enough to take them. I think if they give that many opportunities to Thames Valley, they'll be in trouble and potentially up for an upset.
And the Lahore Cup?
Good question. That's a lot tighter. Like there was three or four sides coming into that, but again, I think the home advantage will come through.
So that's North Otago and Horowhenua Kapiti.
Yeah,
against Mid-Canterbury and East Coast.
Yeah, well, East Coast have done well, but they are a much stronger force at home. And Mid-Canterbury, for the amount of opportunities they left out there, I don't know if they've got that ability to turn that round in a week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it'd be interesting. I love a good weekend footy of playoffs when you get to watch all afternoon and watch those Heartland games, and it leads into the next, and especially on finals day when you see multiple trophies lifted over the course of the day.
Yeah,
it's so much fun.
it'll definitely be a big weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Hope to see some people on horseback. That's always the best thing about watching a Heartland Championship game.
You might want East Coast to get to the final then.
Come on, the East Coast.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you next week. But before we go, I might just have a quick chat to everybody about what the passing of Rugby Pass to World Rugby means to our podcast. We will carry on. The podcast is owned by Sky Sport and will continue to put it out through Rugby Pass's channels. So you don't need to go anywhere. You don't have to worry. We will continue to worry. They're worrying about us. If you're worrying about us.
It'll still be on YouTube.
Don't. It'll still be on YouTube. You can still catch the audio pod, you know, and it'll still be on Sky Sports. So
the comments section will still be alive and well.
Yeah, that's right.
So you can rip us to bits.
It'll still be in there having a crack at you two. It'll be epic. You know, we'll get some Rebels players in there, possibly some Taniwha players in there, and anything that we can. So, yeah, keep on tuning in. The Aotearoa Rugby Pod isn't going anywhere. Thanks once again for joining us. James Parsons in Auckland, Brent Hall in Japan. That's another one. We'll see you next week. Mā te wā.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.